The following is an original production of AZPM News.
For AZPM, I'm Mark McLemore, and this is Arizona Spotlight. Coming up, when you listen to Tucson, what do you hear? That was the question asked on Friday, June 26th, when AZPM held a special event at our new home, the Paul and Alice Baker Center for Public Media. It was a live before an audience edition of Arizona Spotlight. Coming up, you'll hear some highlights from that event, including an essay from nature writer Rebecca Doyle, a poem from Mariana Rivera, and an interview with acclaimed fiction author Linda D. Addison. That's next on this special live edition of Arizona Spotlight. One day, out of the blue, I was contacted by a listener named Rebecca Doyle, who was already a published author specializing in nature writing. She submitted some essays about her passion for the Sonoran Desert and became an occasional contributor to the show. I asked her to share one of her essays with the audience.
Dusk in the desert. A lot of people say Arizona has the best sunsets. I can agree with that. It is a strong motivator to get outside after work. This spring, however, I have been more focused on the hour or so after the sun slips below the horizon and the first stars appear. The green sprouts and pastel flowers of late winter rapidly wither with the March heat wave. By the end of the month, I happen upon aggregations of iron cross blister beetles clinging to the tops of the brittle plant stalks in the waning evening light. The flashy inch-long beetles sport red heads and gold fishnet wing covers bisected by a black cross. The name rightly cautions against handling. They blister the skin. Somehow, between the start and end of walks on April evenings, yellow and pink and peach prickly pear flowers transition from open to closed. Similarly, the cholla flowers in shades of rust, magenta, and fluorescent yellow are a limited time offer. Fortunately, there are many flower buds, and bloom times are staggered over March, April, and May. Tiny off-white catclaw acacia flowers, thickly clustered on spikes like mini bottle brushes, are less eye-catching, but their collective scent draws me to the washes where they grow, especially dense and tall. Also known as wait-a-minute bush, the hooked thorns easily catch skin and clothing, and it can take a painful minute to untangle oneself if snagged. I brave the thorns to seek out the sweet malty scent, similar to oven-fresh bread, if the bread were made with mesquite flour and drizzled with lavender honey. Unlike creosote bushes, whose resiny odor permeates the air after a rain, catclaw's perfume is elusive, compelling from a distance, but strangely muted when sniffed up close. I wish there was an app to identify smells the way I can record and identify a bird song with Merlin. Why does this odor not register as a perfume of spring evenings past? Perhaps this was a good bloom year. Maybe extra heat and aridity enhances the pungency of catclaw aroma. It could also have something to do with dusk, the flowers emitting extra volatile organic compounds to attract evening pollinators like moths. Maybe I am only noticing now that I have begun lingering long after sunset. Monotonous trills from nearby bushes are neither frog nor insect, but rather a lesser nighthawk, singing from its daytime roost on the ground or a low branch. I struggle to localize the sound, hoping to catch the takeoff of this well-camouflaged bird, but I am too late. The nighthawk is already aloft, vacuuming aerial insects. It swoops just above the vegetation in front of me. its long wings held in a shallow V angle, then rises again, rapidly fluttering between glides. Black-throated sparrows settling in for the night tinkle like gentle bells. A brown-crested flycatcher abruptly belts out a trilling whistle, an impatient traffic cop moving things along at an intersection. A great horned owl surveys the scene from the top of a tall saguaro, its silhouette unmistakable thanks to the two jaunty tufts for which it is named. After a couple of hoots, the owl is aloft, off on its evening hunt. Closer by, down a wash, an unseen coyote ventures a tentative yip. It is soon followed by a more confident yip, yip, farther off, and then another and another, until suddenly the whole wash erupts in a crescendoing chorus of barks, wails, and howls, an operatic performance which ends as abruptly as it starts. I am tempted to applaud, but instead continued quietly down the trail, putting distance between myself and the coyotes. The post-coyote quiet is broken by a cackling. An elf owl, the smallest of owls. It is a nervous laughter, and it will not be funny if the great horned owl overhears. The light fades. Jupiter and Venus emerge, flanking the rising moon. Soon, brighter stars such as Sirius and Arcturus present themselves. It is reassuring to watch as successive waves of more distant stars emerge in the twilight. Approaching the parking lot, I encounter a few fellow evening walkers. Most of us, people of the day with miles to go and chores to do before we sleep, leave the trail. But not all. A boy and his mother are heading out into the desert, UV flashlights in hand, their eyes alert, eagerly searching for scorpions. Thank you.
So how long have you been a Tucsonan?
It's a little, like some Tucsonans I've left, you know, and then you get pulled back. So it's hard to kind of count exactly, but on and off about 15 years.
And where did you grow up?
I grew up in Providence, Rhode Island.
You say so many wonderful things about the desert and the things you found here that you love. But I have to ask, is there something you miss from back home?
Yeah, I mean, the ocean state, right? So I think that those formative experiences as a kid, playing in the rocks at the Narragansett Bay down by the water, and that smell, everything about it, it'll always be there.
Rebecca Doyle, thank you.
Thank you.
Rebecca Doyle has many published articles, stories, and essays that spring from her outdoor adventures. Her five-word motto is write, bike, hike, paddle, bird. Our next storyteller at the live event was recommended to us by the University of Arizona Poetry Center.
My name is Mariana Rivera. I am a local poet and 2026 Fellow of Indigenous Nations Poets. Right now, I'm working on cultivating art into my community through poetry. And so today is my homegirl Davina's birthday. And when I listen to Tucson, it sounds a lot like her. So do you remember that night, homegirl, when we took a wrong turn somewhere on our way to find the nearest Circle K? We liked walking, so we didn't mind the detour. I was 19, and I really wanted to share my poetry. I found my way to an open mic, and you found a way to come see me. We knew we'd make it home together. We didn't think it mattered what happened in between. That night, we just kept on going, following streetlights as if we weren't lost. We figured if we kept going, we'd have to get somewhere. Remember how we ended up in some empty streets we didn't recognize? We couldn't pinpoint a place to meet up with your homeboys that were looking for us. Wait till we get somewhere, then we'll tell you where we are, you told them. Do you remember how we never felt scared? Homegirl, I think we were invincible. We were so fearless and bold. We rode our courage smoothly into the night like skateboards. So I guess that we were lucky these streets were paved and new. We walked around until we found a corporate building. Nighttime fluorescence felt strange this close to the freeway, this close to the river, juxtaposed against the desertscape. Having just been built, the building sprang straight up from the ground the way it sprang into the city. The street we passed along the way had art transforming the concrete slabs into sidewalks. Something someone in the city could be proud of. Not like the jagged ruptures of concrete sticking out from the south side streets, bursting through the neighborhood from the pressures of passing time. The dark desert night was empty here. The bus stop had no one waiting because this stop was near no homes and no places to be. There was art etched into the pavement for those just passing by. When I was 17, Mr. Gunnels told me I must think I'm 10 feet tall and bulletproof, but homegirl, together we must have been 20 at least. We should have told your boyfriend a street name to come find us, but does anything else compare to exploring your city on your feet? On our side of the river, we walk down the dry bed, dragging our sneakers through the sandy bottom. We smile at the father and son doing their nightly run. We quiet our breath to listen to the coyotes in the distance. We imagine the land between them and us. Is that why we never felt scared? Do you think maybe the world sees us in its reflection the way I see parts of me and you? When we walk down the street, we greet our neighbors and imagine the land in between everyone. This puts us on common ground with the viejito who stops us that night we get lost. He moved swiftly in the dark, and when we leaned in to listen, he asked for the time. We told him, and he said it was getting late. He wished us safety, twinkling eyes reflecting the moon shifting over all of us, and eventually the night brought us home. Thank you.
That was Mariana Rivera. Back in 2023, I found out that Tucson is home to Linda D. Addison, a writer of all types of poetry and fiction, whose work has appeared in more than 100 story collections, including the modern iteration of Weird Tales magazine. Addison is the first African-American to win the Bram Stoker Award, which is the top achievement for writers of dark fiction and horror. In fact, she was recently awarded another Stoker for Everything Endless, which she co-wrote with Jamal Hodge, chosen as the best poetry collection of 2025. I have spoken with Linda D. Addison before, and our shared enthusiasm for imaginative fiction always comes bubbling to the surface.
Well, I have 7 Bram Stoker Awards. They look like, they're very heavy, and they look like spooky houses. And when you open the door, it has like the year, the name of your book, and your name. And I was the first African-American to win it in any category, but mine's have always been poetry.
There now the folks
can see it.
Oh, my
God.
Yeah.
This just happened 2 weeks ago for this book.
Okay. And the gentleman with you is?
Jamal Hodge, who I wrote the book with. And this was, I have to say this for him, he's the first Black poet to win the Bram Stoker. So it was kind of astounding to be on stage with him. He started off as a mentee with me, and then he just blew up all over the place. He's a very hard student. He studies everything.
Who was the first person who told you you could do this, Linda?
Nobody. Maybe my mom. I was very introverted when I grew up. It wasn't until college I started talking to other people. And she used to tell stories to us. I was the oldest of 9. 7 boys, and she didn't read books. We didn't have books in the house to read stories. She just made them up. So I never really learned until I got into school that you weren't supposed to let your imagination go wild. I thought everyone's mother did that. And then I got to school and found out that it wasn't true. And I just kept going. I've always said this. I've won a lot of awards, but I never write to win awards. It's some kind of wild, crazy blessing, and the universe is having fun with me. Over it.
To those of you who have never heard of Linda before, maybe you'll seek out some of her work now. But often when she goes to these cons and the Bram Stoker Award things and such, they know her, you know. They've literally read her mind. What does that make you feel like? I mean, how do you enjoy interacting with your fans?
It's kind of extraordinary to me because, again, I never did it for anything other than this is just the craziness in my head. And I just had to get it out. So I just wrote all the craziness out. And so the first time the horror community decided they liked my work, I was like, I never thought to call it horror, but if you buy my book, yes, let's be friends.
You can call it a cookbook.
Yeah, it's just always going on. And I have said in the past that I struggled to stay in reality because everything makes me write, every word, all the readings. Oh,
how do you keep up with your ideas?
I have journals. I write everything in journals. I've been writing journals since 1969. I have over 200 of them.
Are they in a diary format?
They're in paper. I like paper. Sometimes I'm writing as me, and sometimes in conversation with the universe because I can't understand things. So I'm like, I don't understand this, but, you know. And right now, the University of Pittsburgh is collecting my papers. So that's kind of crazy. And I've been sending the journals to them, but that's real hard.
If we talk about the theme of when you listen to Tucson, what do you hear?
I came here 12 years ago from New York City, and New York City sounds really different. And I live on Speedway, and the first time I got off the plane, I remember going outside the airport and taking a deep breath and just... like, why does the air taste so sweet here? What's going on? So then I went to visit my aunt, and I saw the mountains, and whatever I was writing then, because I'm always writing, just exploded in my mind. So all of a sudden, this imagination I had lived with for 60 years or more sounded infinite. It always felt like I was rushing to try to fill something. And here with the mountains, it felt infinite. And that didn't... I didn't understand that at all because I grew up in the inner city. I grew up on welfare. I mean, I couldn't possibly be meaning to live here with mountains. But eventually I gave in because everything was so sweet in my mind and everything blew up. And all I could hear was what I always hear, but like echoing off the mountains. So I moved here and that was huge. And I moved into a house with a courtyard that has an orange tree. Not like go to the supermarket and buy oranges, like on the tree in my yard. And hummingbirds. And so I'm always listening to these little jet fighters in my yard when I go out there. Because again, I'm like discovering these things brand new. Because in where I grew up in North Philly, if you saw a tree, that was pretty amazing. So, and they know me now, these hummingbird jet fighters. So they'll come in front of my face when I go out in the yard, and then they'll go away. And I'm like, we're good. And in the morning, I hear mourning doves cooing. And again, oh, where I grew up, I would hear gangs fighting, police, fire trucks. Okay. All right. And... the sound of the rain here, when it's really falling out of the sky, when it's really falling hard, and I have just laid in the bed and just listened to it and fallen asleep like it's an orchestra just for me. If there's any place that's perfect, if there's anything that's a slice of heaven, it is my little place here. And it is the rain singing to me, it is the birds singing to me, it is my mind feeling like it can go as far as the mountains. And I wake up dazed and I look out the window and I laugh to myself because I live alone and I say, I live with mountains.
What's the biggest project on your horizon right now? Are you working on something currently or waiting on something to be published that you think is a high watermark or a summation of where you're at right now?
Oh, I love that question. I wouldn't have thought to ask, but two things. One, I just finished a book. It's in a universe I created. It's hard sci-fi. So each chapter I have a little like thing of what was based on, because like I said, I can look at anything and write something. That's just the way my brain works. And I have an agent who's trying to sell it, and it's hasn't sold yet. And it's also like capable of being like a Black Mirror thing because each chapter is a chapter in its own. So that would be awesome. Then I could get maybe like toys If I could be you have a superhero not yet been merchandised? Toy, that would be amazing.
You haven't been merchandised yet?
No, but I want them.
Yeah,
that's the other thing I'm crazy for. I just want everything.
Someone should make a Linda Addison action figure where you're holding Stoker Award.
Yeah. You are reading everyone's mind except mine. I'm just saying. I have been called such a thing, but I have not seen it. But I'm thinking it's possible. And then what I'm working on now is a science fiction vampire novel. Because I don't really know what I'm writing. So people give it tags, and I'm like, okay, call it that. It is about something that comes from outer space and plays with the DNA to do something, and they're vampires.
So there's no genre that you, if someone came to you and said, Linda, can you write us the next chapter of this story?
If it's wild and crazy, no, I could do it. I mean, I've been in over 100 anthologies. And I've actually done a little thing on YouTube about how to write for anthologies. Because someone will say, this is an anthology about green ghosts. And could you write a poem, Linda? And I'm like, sure. Now, I don't know that what I write is something that's going to fit in the anthology. But I send it and say, if it doesn't work for your vision, that's fine.
Well, we talked earlier, and you said you had a couple of very short pieces that you could read from your recent Bram Stoker Award-winning collection.
I love how that
And so I think let's hear them now.
Yes, I'd be happy to. The first one I'm going to read is actually on a bookmark that our publisher put out.
That's a good idea.
It's called Ghost of Black Holes. And I just want to say that everything in the book, a lot of it is based on actual physics and cosmology, so if you can look it up. I'm so inspired by real things, even though I write not real things. Ghost of Black Holes. Greedy, greedy black holes, eating everything, until alone, nothing left but to shrink, crumble, leaving behind massless light speed travelers dancing closer, closer, without time, without space, until, bang, here we go again.
Here we go again.
Thank you. And one section at the end of the book is Jamal and I sort of going back and forth, inspiring each other, and it's all based on the 7 Hermetic principles, which I didn't even know about until he told me. So I was like, yes, let's do that. So this one's law 3, the law of vibration. And it's called escape velocity. What speed is needed to escape creeping limitations born from aging collections of molecules? Atoms still vibrating, protons and neurons dancing, even as fragile bones creak. Weakened muscles strain against gravity. When time speeds through day and night, the struggle to find thoughts surf away from unavoidable last breath. Eternal stardust continues to dance, disguised under illusion of stillness. So that's based on the idea that even if you die, there's still vibrations in your body. So that's sort of part of the story. I don't usually explain things, but why not?
And one last thing I want to mention. The first time we talked, we put a photo on the web of you, I believe, receiving your first Bram Stoker. We didn't make a slide. I wish we had. We should have. But your mother was in the shot with you. So she lived to see you make it. She lived to see you become acclaimed.
Yeah, she did.
Yeah.
That was crazy. And two quick things. One is that at the award where I won, I was on stage, she was in the audience with my writer's group, and I said, and this is the person, the reason why my brain doesn't calm down, it just goes crazy. Now I have this, and my mom stood up literally and did like, I was like, yes, you did that. Okay. And then the other thing is that I was at a big anthology, Dark Matter, which was the first anthology of African Americans writing science fiction, fantasy, and horror. It was in Harlem. Big book, big book. And I said to my husband, I'm bringing my mom as my date. Okay. And so we go there, and all of a sudden they're interviewing people, and my mom, they ask my mother, like, what does she think? And she was like, well, you know, that girl always did daydream, but this is a pretty good book that she's in. I was like, thank you. Thank you so much. And one last sort of human thing is that she later developed dementia and eventually passed from Alzheimer's. But so after that, I won a lot of awards. The only one she remembered is that first one. She always remembered that one. And that was a lot. That meant a lot to me.
And that was my conversation with acclaimed author Linda D. Addison. Thank you for listening to Arizona Spotlight. This show is a production of AZPM and is posted weekly at azpm.org. Helping out with this live event were AZPM colleagues Timna Gershon, Karina Mendoza, Sean Teague, Clarice Bales, David Lee, Tony Paniagua, and Laura Holansky. Spotlight's production engineer is Jim Blackwood. I'm producer and host Mark McLemore.
This has been an original production of AZPM News.